Say What? Say What radio show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
Welcome to the Say What special, Woo Reality, a series of podcasts that will eventually be made into a book. Now, most of you, I hope you all by this time understand that woo is those events that are paranormal, psychic, amazing healings, you know, things that don't fall into the category of known or expected, let's put it that way. Well, what makes the difference between somebody that has a whole bunch of those woo-woo experiences like myself and other people? Is it just the individual, or is it where the individual resides, where they spend their time, in an area that's conducive to woo-woo events? Today's date is January 15th, 2026, and we're going to discuss the property that I bought in South Florida. It's an acre of land surrounded by 4 other acres of land. So it's like a little park in the hub of one of the busiest, most populated areas of the world, and also one of the most desirable places in the world. This property I talked about earlier in the book was unbelievable that I found it. And I didn't find it. We just happened to be driving by, and this friend said, oh, we should buy this property because there was a sign for sale on the property. And then the interest rates crashed from 11% to 9%. This was back in 1986. And it was only $50,000. And it was one of those things that I really couldn't believe I got. And I cover it more in the beginning. But this land became known as the Wilder Yard. Like wilderness, but this is a yard. When I first got here, there were big oaks, old oaks. There was an area of pine trees that are Australian pine trees. And there was also an area of poncianus, which is a beautiful tree that puts out this incredible red blossom in the June timeframe. Beautiful trees. And that was about it. The soil itself, everything around it was mostly sand. So the house is set back into the yard, halfway through the acre. It's an old house. It's at least 85 years old, maybe long older than that. It's more like a good-sized cabin than, you know, what we think of as a regular house. So as far as the house goes, it works absolutely perfectly for me. And I'm surrounded by this incredible yard where you really can't hear your neighbors unless they're having a party. But the neighbors that are around me, I know. Two of them are very good friends of mine. And the others I have a really nice relationship with, including across the street. The only problem is that it floods. And we'll get into what that means, because it does have certain woo characteristics to it. So I get the property. I'm walking around, and it's like unbelievably kind of surrealistic that I would have this property, that I actually own the property. And it took a while before I really began to appreciate what I was really gifted. The key to what I'm trying to present to you right now is that the property itself is in an area of South Florida. that has a history of water from the land going towards the rivers on the east side of the Florida Peninsula and down into the ocean. So it just so happens that the property that I'm on is the lowest point anywhere in the neighborhood. So I get floods on this neighbor in this neighborhood that are just, and my neighbors can be completely dry and I've got water in the house, that type of thing. But over the years, I've been able to kind of make the house floodproof. It comes in, you have cleanup. But I know that nothing can be closer to the floor than 6 inches because it can come in fast. But the key, the real key to Florida and why it's kind of a magical place. As a matter of fact, the city of Miami is called the Magic City. The energies that are naturally here by the by nature herself are pretty darn awesome. The most important thing being what's called the aquifer. Now, the peninsula itself, peninsula being having three sides of water, is very long. And it's essentially flat. I mean, there's hilly, as you're getting up towards the north part of the central and north part, you'll get more hills. There's certainly no mountains or anything like that. And it really was, is a limestone bed. For whatever reasons, you know, we're talking like probably millions, many millions of years ago. The water that was created in the Atlantic and then the Gulf of America, all but that water would sort of meet in this weird way because you got the Gulf Stream, and it would take set shells and other critters, and it ended up getting piled up on what was probably some kind of landmass as some kind of a base, but the whole peninsula is basically limestone because that's what happens when you have, you know, a bunch of shells that deteriorate over time, they turn into limestone. And there's rivers coming in from Georgia that get to the state of Florida, and some of it goes all around the surface, but a good portion of it actually goes down. And over the millenniums has channeled out the limestone in the middle of the state, right down the entire peninsula. So underneath us, we have what's called the aquifer. One of the things that the floods made me do was to really analyze the geology of the state. And one day I was looking at something and I was listening to the Spaniards who came here and it was Ponce de Leon, and supposedly he was looking for the Fountain of Youth. Well, he's looking for it. Nobody tells if he found it or, I mean, you don't, there's stories about it, but basically that's what he was looking for. And I got to thinking about it because having the aquifer is a very interesting form of energy. Whatever reason, alkaline water is the best kind of water you can drink. And when you test the water in the aquifer, it's very alkaline because it's in the limestone surrounding. What I think happened is that there was a story from the islands around and that the best water you could get was this water in Florida. So when the Spaniards got here, they probably saw all these, you know, rivers and inlets and stuff with fresh water. And they probably thought, oh my God, look at all this good water. But the Indians, of which they made friends initially with some of the Indians, Native Americans, they're going like, oh, no, no, no. We fish in there, fish poop in there. No, we don't drink that water. We use it for our farms and stuff. No, you dig down, you make a well. And when they made the wells, and of course they had the wells, they were in the aquifer in that alkaline water, pure alkaline water. Coming off a ship where I can't even imagine drinking the water that they have on those ships. Most of the sailors were not healthy, but they get to Florida, they start drinking the river and the river water, and yeah, they're getting better because they're drinking that. But then the Indians give them the secret to the fountain of youth, alkaline water, free from the ground. So that's just an aside. I don't know if it's true, but it very well could be, because I think one of the reasons that when I first moved down here, which was like 50 years ago, more, it was obvious that we had a large population of seniors that seemed to do a lot better in Florida. And it very well could have been because of the oceans and the ionization, positive, negative ions that you get around ocean water and flowing water anywhere. That must have been helpful. The sun had to have been immensely helpful, but it might have been the water too. So I'm telling you this story because I just want to give you a feeling for what this whole area is called, the Wilder Yard. And the first flood I had no idea this area flooded out when I bought it. And it was a few years before I had been working at night at the condominium that I worked for 25 years. This one night we had a terrible downpour, and I was a maintenance engineer, and it was threatening to flood out the parking lot, which was basically an underground parking lot. So I was fighting this flood all night long, and I got home, somewhere after 8 o'clock. And around 8 o'clock, all I wanted to do was get in bed. I mean, I was so tired, I was exhausted. Well, the next thing I know, there's this big orange thing waking me up, and I was like, "What the heck?" Well, it was my next door neighbor, Sandy, who I knew, but we weren't, good friends or anything. And she said, "Nancy, your house is flooding out." And I said, "What?" And I jumped up, and the water was already at ankle deep. And she was in a rain slicker. That's why she looked all yellow. That was my introduction to the floods in Florida. But they were seldom. And normally, maybe 4 to 6 inches would get in the house, but nothing drastic. So there was this one time, and it could come at any time during the year. It was weird. We've got a rainy season and a dry season, but I've had floods in the dry season, even and more in the rainy season. But the concept of water on ground is that it'll eventually drain out. So everybody around me is draining out, and I was to later find out why. Because it was draining into basically my yard. But in my yard, it wasn't draining out like it should. So I had no idea why. And a friend of mine who was staying with me, he had a friend who came over, and this guy was put wells, drilled wells. And he said to me, "Why are you still got flood water?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know." And so, somewhere later in the week, he came back and he had the truck with him, the driller, and he drilled down. And what he found out was that 10 feet below me, above the aquifer, was like Everglades muck. And this muck would seal off the ability of the aquifer to take in any of the rainwater. And that's why it wasn't draining out. He was such a nice man. He came in and for free put in a I think it's an 8-inch, maybe it's a 10-inch PVC pipe 30 feet down, so that not only is it beyond the muck, but it's actually in the aquifer. And he called it, he said, well, it's essentially a well, but to me, it was a drain. So after that, it would drain out faster because it had this way of getting out of the yard. Not too much faster, but faster. Well, the reason we're talking about the aquifer and giving you a feeling for, what this place is really all about is because water is incredibly conductive to electromagnetic energy and other energies. Therefore, this place, by the very nature of its geology, has the tendency to be more magical, or in our case, woo. Things can happen here that they might not happen other places. And we know that there's a lot of sacred, special areas that the indigenous people really respect. And my, let's say, research into it indicates that those special places are special because of geological things that the people really probably don't come to a grasp of, which I did. Okay. And I found it interesting. But then as I lived here longer, I found it really interesting. Now, in the chapters before, I talked about how I got into gemstones and the energies of gemstones. Well, getting into understanding the gemstones, that they hold an energy that they radiate out and they've got different frequencies, a lot of that information was easy for me to understand because I had been an electronic warfare officer and had come to an understanding of electromagnetic waves. It was basic information, but it gave me the basic scientific understanding that this stuff could be very real. And then I got an amethyst pendant and started realizing I was having changes in myself. And I said, it's got to be this amethyst crystal. And I went and found a book on gemstones and the energy and healing properties of them, and discovered that, yeah, this stuff is basically very real. So the energy coming from the minerals led me into the study of energies and healing. I think probably the most important book I read during this time was called Vibrational Medicine, and it was by a Dr. Gerber. A couple of years ago, I took a look, and it's still being published. I recommend it to anybody that's interested in energy and energy healing, because what he did was he just went through research that had been compiled by others on many different subjects. And you wrote this book that was like a story after story of how it was proven that energy was very healing. There are so many books that are out there now, particularly, but back then, this is a time frame of the late 80s, early 90s. And in South Florida, I don't know about the rest of the world, but definitely in South Florida, there was a real movement towards understanding energies, understanding energy healers. That's when I was hearing about Reiki. And, I met quite a few. Well, having the crystal store there, she would bring in people that knew different things about different subjects, and I listened to these people talk. So I was getting that kind of an education, and this is still prior to the internet. And there were more and more books being written about it. So one of the books that was really, really, again, a fundamental, I'm only picking the ones that really made a difference in the way that I responded, let's put it that way, was a book on gem elixirs. And I looked for the book. I know it's here someplace, but I couldn't find it, so I can't tell you the author. But Gem Elixirs. This was an individual's look at gemstones and minerals. A gemstone is a type of mineral that is basically more pure and expensive than a lot of minerals that are just composites. That's why shungite's not expensive, because the composites of easily obtainable elements. So this book was based on homeopathy. Now, homeopathy has been around for about 300 years now, and it was developed in France, and I don't Mesmer, I think his name is. Mesmerized comes from his last name. And he began to work on different energies. And that's the guy that you hear about. That's the first guy I heard about. But it led into the concept of homeopathy, which was the idea that every plant, every flower, they weren't into minerals. It was all of the plant kingdom, had an energy. A lot of those energies were from plants that were known to be medicinally helpful. So let's take arnica. You take arnica and the arnica plant, you can use for medicinal purposes. But when you do it with homeopathy, you take a piece of the leaf and you cut it and you put it in water. And then you take that and you do it again and again and again. But what you're doing is you're essentially taking, and it's been so long, but it's like you only put a few drops of the original elixir in to make it stronger. So if you're using less to make it stronger, what's that doing? It's taking out the it's divorcing itself, getting more separate from the 3D material leaf in this case, into pure energy. And homeopathic doctors were so effective. This is based on Native American concepts as far as healing goes. But the homeopathic doctors were so successful that in the original hospitals, in the original, the quote, pharmaceutical stuff, not pharmaceutical, but actually nature's medicine, they were required to be in those hospitals. To be a hospital, you had to have a homeopathic doctor on staff. When the American Medical Association took over, they forbade homeopathy to be used in the hospitals. Well, why? Because the American Medical Association and the schools that were now teaching the doctors were all being supported by this new industry called pharmacy, pharmaceutical, big pharma. And they knew that homeopathy was very inexpensive and very effective, more effective than anything they could provide. But they didn't want to admit that. So they got rid of all homeopathic, called them kooks. So that's the beginning of the change in the way that standard medical operations operated. They wanted to sell you product and hoped you'd stay sick, Right from the get-go, as soon as the American Medical Association took over. But the theory of natural medicine and natural healing did not die because of the American Medical Association. It just went off on its own little part of the universe. And that's the part of the universe that I was studying at this time frame in the late 80s, early 90s. I read the Gemstone book, which was based again on homeopathy. You take a ruby and you put it in water, and the water would take the ruby charge. And then you go through the same standard, making it stronger with same concepts of homeopathy. 10 drops of the original in so much water, and 10 drops in the next, and you kept getting it more potent as far as an energy healer. And yes, don't think too much about it. It doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense, but it works. And this book was very, very informative. The guy had done his research. He found out that like ruby is really good for health, for your heart. And every stone had an energy that was an energy compatible to different areas of your body. And because a ruby naturally vibrates in the energy that a perfect heart would vibrate in. If your heart's off and you're wearing ruby, ruby keeps putting out the frequency, and your heart begins to resonate towards that frequency and to start vibrating in a healthy way that then theoretically heals your heart. So I get into doing the gemstones. What happened was that, let me just give you, let me just look at the notes here for a second. Yeah, okay. I worked for 25 years, so most of the stories I tell you really are from here on in are at that time frame. I was working during the nighttime, and I was getting up at, well, getting up. I was seeing the sunrise come up and over 5,000 times. I'd stand on the beach, I'd watch it come up, and well, unbeknownst to me, the energy coming off the sun at sunrise and then sunset, not quite as powerful, but sunrise is like the perfect time to go out and get absolutely saturated with sun energy. And sun energy at those an hour before and an hour, hour before sunrise, an hour before sunset, the angle of the sun puts out a red light compared to the normal, more bluish light that you get any other time of the day. That red light works with your body. Your body is exposed to it. And what I'm understanding now is that the mitochondria, which are organisms in your body that or at the cellular level that take fat energy that you take in by food and then converts it to the energy that you need for the body to use. So when you're in that sun burst of the more reddish light, that is absorbed into your body. And what I think happens is that that frequency allows your mitochondria to duplicate. So you get more mitochondria, you get more of the energy that the body needs to use to breathe, to run, to, everything comes from the conversion of the energies from the food into mitochondria energy that is used that way. So I didn't realize that because I was doing that, I didn't need to sleep much. So for this 25 years, I slept very little. I mean, 4 hours a day, maybe. On Mondays when it was my night off, I'd sleep like 10 hours, but, and it was, 7 days a week. I only had one day off. But that, and I kept telling people, oh, you sleep too much. You're like dead people, not realizing that they needed to sleep. I didn't because I was seeing the sunrise so many times. But that's just an aside. So there was a lot of let's say, creative, positive time that I had to do a real deep dive into metaphysics regarding energy, regarding healing, and regarding a lot of other things. So one day I come home, again about 8 o'clock in the morning, and I ever since I had gotten to the property, it was like I was getting more and more connected to what I considered guides, whether it's my spirit, my soul. Somebody was telling me stuff. My guardian angel, I don't know who it was, but I would get information. I just followed it. What they told me to do, I do. Well, what the hell? I'm not doing anything else. Let's see what happens. So they were very explicit in what I was supposed to do. Now, by that time, I had quite a collection of minerals, and I had made a lot of the elixirs. So I had to get minerals that, and they would tell me, you want the stone. So I'd get the stone. Then other ones, they'd say, no, you need the elixir. So I get the elixir. I had a gallon of water that was not even opened. They had me take this gallon and start putting the stones in there and the drops of the elixir. And then I had a, let's say it was a power wand. It was about 2.5 feet long of copper, 2-inch copper. And at the end of it was a crystal that's called a laser crystal. It's instead of the normal six-sided crystal that you see, this had 3 points, and it's quartz. The only thing different is the shape, but they were, highly valued. Now, the woo-woo story about that was that I was, and I told you about it, was like this, the most amazing fair on minerals that I ever went to, that was filled with Native Americans, that taught me a great deal of information. And I was there with some friends, and we'd been walking around for hours looking at this and looking at that. And all of a sudden, I'm aware that there's something in my left pocket, and I don't remember what it is. So I reach in there and I pull out this laser crystal. And I thought, oh my God, did I accidentally pick that up somehow? And I said to the people with me, did you see laser crystals any place? And they're like, I don't remember. I said, well, how the hell is this gonna get my pocket? But it did. And that's what was in this wand, this energy wand. And they had me get that, and they had me stick the laser point of it into the jug of water, in a plastic jug, right? Put that down in there. And they had me position it like between the house and this small grove of poinciana that then merged into the pines, all going towards the front of the house, the front of the street. And it was this PowerPoint. You can feel around the property these different areas that were putting out a lot of energy. So that's where they had me put it. And then I went in and fed the animals and took a nap and kind of forgot about the thing until the next day when I come home and I hear, go get it. And I'm going, go get what? And then I remember, oh, okay. So I go out there and I said, well, whatever's happened, this has got to be a really powerful energy concoction. And yet, when I pulled out the wand and the water was dripping on, I had it drip on my hands, I didn't feel anything really, which was more surprising than I could believe, because there was so much energy in it. There was like, I think there was close to 2 dozen different energies in this water. Why does this feel like it's only water? I was developing energy sensitivity. But as it sat there, and I'm trying to figure out what's happening, I'm noticing that because I'm working with it that now I'm beginning to feel some energy off of it. And I didn't know, am I just getting really sensitive to it, or is something changing in it? I had a guy that was staying with me, and I went into the house, and he had just gotten up, and he had coffee in it. Well, he was making coffee. And I said, "Before you make the coffee and drink the coffee, I want you to do me a favor." And I got the bottle of water, and I poured a little bit in the glass, and I said, "Will you please drink this?" And he said, "What is it?" And I said, "It's just water." You saw me take it out of the, "It's just water, but there's an energy field in it, I think." Oh, okay. He knew about this stuff. So he drank it, and he went, "Oh, wow, that's got quite a jolt to it." And I was kind of laughing, because as he drank it, I felt that energy get more. It was like every time it would interact with another human being, it was getting more powerful. So I had a partner that was working with me on some energy devices, let's just call them that. And he was going with his soon-to-be wife down to a health fair. A lot of energy workers there and stuff. And I put the this stuff, whatever, it ended up being called nectar, so I'll just call it nectar. I put the nectar in a spray bottle, and I said to him, well, first off, I had him spray himself and his wife, and they both were like, they could feel the energy, but more importantly, I could feel that the energy every time it was interacted with a human being was getting stronger. So I said, I want you to go down there and just get people to let you spray this around. And I told him why. He understood it. So that first day, I kept checking on the gallon of water, and it was getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And this was, even before cell phones. So when he came back, he reported that every time that they would do this, the people around the spray would get very happy and seem to have a calmness come over them, and that they could detect that the, solution, the nectar, was getting stronger. And I had seen the same thing in the gallon jug. So we began to work with nectar. And it's a long story. It was a long process. I'm just going to give you the highlights. He realized that foam intersoles, the stuff that you find inside the your shoe, the foam, the foam ones. A lot of times you can buy them and put them in your shoes, that type of thing. That foam was mostly made of water. And he really was kind of a con man. But he goes down and he talks to this factory that made inner soles for shoes, and convinced them to make a batch for him where they added nectar to the, when they were using water, they were using water that had been spiked with nectar. And he did that. And by God, the foam kept the nectar energy. So then he went over to the Florida International Sports Facility and convinced them there to test athletes with and without the inner soul. And the results of that were stunning. They would test the athlete out and get all the metrics and all that, stuff recorded. And then they'd put the inner soul in, and they'd have them go through the same routine. And every time they far surpassed their base, attempt. So unbeknownst to me, those results, we did some other things with them I might expand on, but those results he took to the Nike shoe company and convinced them that they should do some testing on it. And they did. And they found he was right. But they didn't know how to advertise it. And he honestly had a basic understanding, but not a deep understanding, one that would be able to, like me, I could go to these people and I could have explained why is this happening, so that they could figure out a way of advertising it to sell it. But no, he didn't want me knowing about it because, like I say, it was basically a con artist. This was going to be his thing, and he was going to get the whole shit and caboodle and just, push me to the side. Well, instead of going with the Nectar, Nike went with Air Jordan shoes. And I found that part of the story out from his wife after she divorced him. Okay. But the other thing that we did was he got a hold, he somehow managed to know this doctor that was very, very interesting. He was a certified doctor in three different disciplines, like bones and nervous and something else, internal, I think. But he had 3 degrees in being a doctor. And he was absolutely fascinated by energy healing. So he set up a test, and he got patients of his to come over to the clinic after they were going home from work. And there was only five of them. And they get there, and he took a stress test on them. How stressed out are they? Well, they're just getting home from work. They'd been in traffic. They were pretty stressed. And then we put the had them put the InterSole into their shoes, and then he retested them. And within a few minutes, they were in a completely relaxed state, that was being medically tested. We would take the we able we were able to find out that there were different mediums, like talc powder is one of them, but the other one is used in swimming pools to clean the pools. It's potassium something or other. I don't even remember what it was. So we were able to charge these particular substances. So the I didn't have the chemistry background to really understand this other chemical stuff, the sodium, whatever it was, or potassium, whatever it was. But I did understand talc, because talc is a basic mineral. And the molecular structure of the talc is like two three-sided pyramids with their bases together. That's what the molecule looks like. So talc was like the perfect battery for holding the nectar energy. In swimming pools, we would take this chemical that was used for swimming pools that happened to have the nectar energy in it. And as soon as you, I would always test the water with my hand to feel, is it hard? Is it soft? What's it feel like? And then I put the nectar down, and as soon as it hit the water would become silkier. So the only way I could ever figure is it was silkier. And we would go to different pools. Like there was in the condominium of a couple of friends of mine, they had this big pool, and there was a lot of kids in it. And there, it was a weekday, and they were just yelling and screaming. And I go over and I put a little of this powder in the water. And within minutes, they had stopped the screaming. They're talking to one another. They're having fun, but it was not at the level of craziness that had been there. So I take it to the condominium's pool, which is bigger than an Olympic-sized swimming pool, and I put it in there. And it was in there for months. One day I go to work, and the pool has been drained. And I've got to w watch it all night long. They're refilling it, and I got to make sure that nothing goes wrong. So in the morning, when the pool guy got there, I said, "Why'd you have to drain the pool?" And he said, "Somebody took a crap in it." So this entire, I mean, trillions of thousands of gallons of water had to be emptied out because somebody pooped in the pool. And I kind of mumbled to myself, "Oh, I have to put some more nectar in it." And he said, "You put your powder in there?" Because I talk about it to other people. I let them put it in their shoes, and I was always talking about it. I said, "Yeah," and he said, "Oh my God, that's why." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, we haven't been able to get the people out of the pool. They come down here and they're in it all day. We have a problem with overcrowding in the pool." And so I went, "Well, that's a really good test, you know." And so I'm just giving you your experience with nectar, because when I found shungite, I was already very familiar with what minerals could do. I knew what nectar could do. And virtually everything that nectar does, shungite does, only it does more. Although I haven't tested nectar the way we've tested shungite, so maybe it doesn't do more. But bit by bit, I was learning more and more about energy, energy healing, homeopathy, herbs compared to, pharmaceuticals. At one time, to give you a feeling for the place here, it would draw a tremendous number of people. People would just be drawn to the property. And two of those people were both Native American shamans. One of them was from Taos, New Mexico, and of the Taos tribe there. He was here. As a matter of fact, I have a painting that he did. He was also an artist. I have a painting of his. And the other one was a shaman, a Mohegan Indian shaman, who had been born with the placenta still over his face. In the Native American lore, a baby that comes out with the placenta on, over their head, was had the veil and were shamans by birth. That was the indicator. So he had spent his childhood and youth going to different Native American tribes and learning. Six different tribes he went to, and so he had learned from six different shamans what it meant to be a shaman. He ended up marrying a Miccosukee princess, and the Miccosukees are the Indians that are closest to us, the native, to the area, Miccosukee. And he married the princess there, and that's when I met him. He was married to the princess of the Miccosukee tribe, and he came here. Now, in both cases, they were absolutely in love with the property. And the Tao Indian, he was just traveling through, so he wasn't local. I didn't pursue any kind of a friendship. But the Miccosukee Mohawk shaman, I did. And one time he was going to have a class on native herbs. So we have a caravan of like five cars, and he was in the front car with me. He had me driving. And we're driving along the road in the Everglades, which is a river of grass. It's basically a swamp, but it has areas where trees are growing, and you've got solid ground type of thing, little islands through this swamp. And but we're driving down the road, and he said, "Okay, stop here," and we get out and we go out and take a walk out into the surroundings, and he'd pick some herb and he'd say, "If you do this, this, and this to this, and this, and this, and this is healed. But if you do this, it'll kill you." It was like every time we made about five stops at that time, and I was just so stunned that it was always the same presentation, and I'm thinking, I said it out loud to the girl that was not, I didn't know her except she was in the class, and I said, "I can't figure out how they figured all this out, And she said, "Oh, I figured it out." She said, "The last one standing is a shaman," which I thought was very telling and probably the truth. So again, I had a deep, very personal learning through my experiences of meeting different people, but it was the yard that was really attracting them to me so that I could get this information from them. That led to understanding the power of energy. I started the first thing that really got me into that kind of mentality was that where I was living at that earlier, I mean, I'm talking before I moved to the Wilder Yard, before that, 20 minutes down the street from me was the Coral Castle. This wonderful, unbelievable place that Ed, and I can't ever remember his last name, and I meant to look it up, but this guy, Ed, from another country came here after he'd broken up with his girlfriend, and he started making this place that became known as Coral Castle. And it was made of huge pieces of limestone that somehow he was in, and right next to where the castle, all of these, he'd make chairs and tables, and he had an area that looked like a living space. And it had, like a, I think it was at least three-story high tower. Maybe it was two, but it was pretty tall. And other walls of that he had done, and doors that have this massive amount, a ton of limestone. And all you needed to do was push it very lightly, and it would open up and close and open up and close. I was to find out later that many, many years later, decades later, that the door that I'm telling you about actually broke. And what they found that it was pivoting on was a Coke bottle. They never were able to, fix it. But that a Coke bottle. I mean, everything about this place was very strange, and he had made like this little tower that was two stories tall. Well, it was a story. It had an upper story to it, so it was two stories altogether. And that was where he lived. But underneath that upper story, there was an area that was his workshop, even though it was opened up. And when I got there, before it really got famously known, and you have a lot of people there, and they made changes to it that I don't like. They took away a lot of the magic because of, instead of leaving it the dirt floor, they put pathways of pavement and stuff like this, and they disrupted the energy. So I wouldn't even bother going back now. But I went back half a dozen times before I saw that happen, and no. But that particular first time I went there was a guide. And he took me under his wing, and he said, "Let's go over to where the workshop was." And he had me stand in a specific place, and he said, "Okay, now just feel the energies." And he said, "Okay, now take a full step to your right." And I did, and all of a sudden the energies had changed completely. And that's when he started talking about ley lines and these energy lines and energy field that surrounds the earth, and that somehow or another, Ed knew that those lines of energy were there. And he said, "I don't know how, I don't know the science, but somehow or another, he was able to harness those energies to be able to move these tons of limestone all by himself." So that was a real like, whoa. So there's more to this energy stuff than just simply healing. And I began to pursue more of into the concept of energy devices. And of course, I met Nikola Tesla. and what he was doing, which is very similar, but in a much grander way. But my guides were continually having me build devices that I had no idea what I was building, what they were for, but I would follow their directions. And in one case, they had me build this contraption and I put it in the ground. And my partner, before I knew he was a con man, I was talking to him and I said, yeah, they had me build this weird thing. It's in the ground. I don't know what it's for. And about an hour later, he calls me again. He says, turn on your television. I said, what station? He says, it doesn't matter. And I turned on the station and they were frantically doing weather warnings that there were something like 1,000 lightning strikes every minute in South Florida and to get undercover. And he realized what it was, and I realized what it was, and I ran out and I pulled it up from the ground and it immediately stopped. But all of a sudden it was like, oh my God, this device, which I couldn't duplicate it now, I didn't take notes. I said, this thing would create an environment like that. That was one of the things. Another thing that happened was in learning the healing. One of they warn you that when you're doing energy healing, you don't want to pick up the negative energy that you're trying to get rid of, and that you have to be careful. But they never quite tell you, well, how do you do that? So I kind of like chatted in my head to the guides and, what do I do about that? And it was like, I wasn't really getting a clear answer at all from them, but I just went through what I know. And I know that salt is often has the ability of changing energies, like, kind of buffering them down. So I decided, well, I'll just send all this energy, this negative energy, to the salt lakes, because it was the biggest place in the world that I knew that had a lot of salt. And I was doing that for some time. And I come home from work, I walk in the house, and I feel this hand on my shoulder that pushed me down into a chair. Now, when I had come into the house, I had turned the television on. I always did. It was always on news. And there was a whole news thing about Salt Lake, the city, the area, was being flooded out, that it had stopped raining. And that's an area mostly of desert, and it doesn't rain like that, but they were flooding out. And I realized, holy crap, did I do that? And because I listened to the energies and messaging that I was getting, I kind of said, yeah, I did. So I said, well, what do I do with this stuff? And they said, focus on a quasar. No, focus was, well, yeah, no, focus on a black hole. And they said, there's a black hole in every galaxy. I didn't know that, but later it was proved that that's true. There's a black hole in the middle of the galaxy. Just put all the dark energy, the energy you want to get rid of, put it through there, because it will erupt in another part of the galaxy as a quasar and be purified. Okay, all right. So that's how I started doing it. But my point is that I was doing something to Salt Lake energy-wise, and they were having weather phenomenon. To, unbelievable. There was another case where they had me build this device, and it was very simple. It was another rod, but it wasn't the long one. This one was a foot tall, and they had me put copper wiring around it, and one end of the copper wiring they had me put on a regular flashlight battery. And then at the top of the coil around the copper, they had me leave it as a 4-inch piece of the copper wire just sticking out. And I had a bunch of quartz crystals, small ones. And myself and my friend Peter, that often was playing with these things with me, we go out and we set it up. We're outside. And I said, I'm getting the, put to a, just hold the crystal. I was holding the thing against the battery. And I said, put that crystal on that wire and just leave it there for a little bit. And he did. And I said, okay, just let go of it. And he did. And instead of falling down, it started traveling and it went a good 6 inches beyond the copper wire before then it would lose its charge and drop. I was like, whoa, what's this about? And at that, we did a half a dozen times, maybe more. And then my dog, Luke, came over, German Shepherd. He loved Peter. And he comes over and he's wanting to get, you know, some love from Peter. And Peter had, he had his hand on the crystal and the wire. He was charging it up. And he reached out and he touched Luke. And Luke jumped back and looked terrified and ran away and never would get near Peter again, which was a real shame. And another time, Peter comes over and they had had me make this incredibly complicated pyramid thing. It was a, you know, like a 2 foot pyramid, you know, from the base to the apex that was sitting on a table. And underneath it, there was another pyramid. And there was a big ruby. I mean, a long story about the ruby, but it was a big ruby, very powerful ruby that was in this device that they had me make. And I'm showing Peter the device. And he walked up to it and he stuck his hand in the middle of the pyramid. And I yelled at him, Peter, don't do that. Because I wouldn't do that. I don't know what's happening with the energies in there. I just built it. And he didn't jerk his hand out. He just took his hand out. And then all of a sudden he started to, I could see he got dizzy. He fell down. I said, what's the matter? He says, I don't know, but I feel like I'm dying. I said, oh, shit. You know? So I got him in a chair and he's sitting there and I can see he's having just a terrible time coming out of this dizziness. And he never really got right for an hour. But that was another, you know, you got to be careful about what you're doing with this stuff. I'm just looking at my notes here. Yeah, I basically covered what I wanted to cover as far as introducing you to the Wilder Yard and the way that I was getting into energy healing and energy devices and some of the woo-woo experiences I was having. So I'm going to end the show now because it's about an hour, I guess. And you need to have this understanding of the Wilder Yard to kind of appreciate the next phase of my woo-woo existence. And if you think you've heard some woo-woo stories up to now, wait until you hear what happens next. I thank you for being here. Be blessed, be safe, and I'll see you next time.
Say what? Say what radio show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.